remember the 1960s show, Gomer Pyle. And the sergeant had a favorite description for Gomer whenever he messed up, goofed up an assignment. And that term of affection was knucklehead. Knucklehead. It wasn't a term of endearment, by the way. And I'd like to take you back about 40 years ago where I played the role of a knucklehead. My friend had recently got his driver's license, so we were out cruising, sodas in hand, and when we finished our beverage, we simultaneously threw our bottles out the car windows, and you could hear the smashing of the glass on the pavement. That mindless event happened about 1/2 mile away from my friend's home. When we reached our destination, I was in my friend's backyard, and he yells to me from the front of the house and said that there was a man at the front door holding broken glass in his hand. I immediately went to take out my knife because I didn't know what I would find when I got around front. And as long as I live, I will never forget the words of my friend who yelled out to me. He said, "Kenny, put your knife away. It'll just make him mad." At the front door was a mountain man. I've never seen someone that big in my life. You know when you're driving through like the mountains of West Virginia or North Carolina and you go through those little places and you kind of wonder, you know, who's living back in some of the shacks there? This was the guy. This was the guy. There was no doubt about it in my mind. And it always makes me think about Moe's from the Three Stooges statement. When he saw this gargantuan giant of a man, he looked and he said to the others, "That's not a man, that's a committee." No wonder my compatriot in stupidity cried out, "Kenny, put the knife away. It'll just make him mad." Now, let me take you back not 40 years ago, but 3,000 years ago, as you're turning to 1 Samuel chapter 17 with me. We have two mountains, and between the mountain is the valley of Elah. There is one audacious-looking man that is coming out daily on the behalf of the Philistines, staring down the Israelites and saying, "Give me a man to fight." On the other side is a king who also is tall. He's head and shoulders above the average person. His name is Saul. Can you imagine one of Saul's captains pacing into camp? And Saul is there holding a spear. And then the captain looking at him and say, "Saul, just put it away. It'll just make him mad." What is your number one challenge in life? If you had to list it right now, what would that be? Maybe you have an unsaved spouse or one that just acts like it. Or perhaps you have that child that is following knuckleheads at this time. It can be a financial challenge or it can be a physical challenge as well. What is your number one challenge today? See, the problem with Saul's army, and it's the same problem that plagues us oftentimes, we are visually challenged. So here's the question. What is it that David understood that an entire army did not perceive? There are some lessons today for us to learn from 1 Samuel 17 in David's encounter with Goliath that I would love for you to take home with you. Now, let's look at this together. 1 Samuel chapter 17, and let's together contemplate what it means to attempt the impossible for God. 1 Samuel chapter 17, I'll read to you verses 1 through 11. It's a long account, is it not? Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle, and were gathered together in Socal, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Socal and Azekah and Ephes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Join me in prayer, please. Father, I can truly say I love this account. I thank you for placing it in the Holy Bible. Lord, I so appreciate how when you are on our side, we are always in the majority. Father, each one here today, I'm sure, has at least one challenge in his or her life. Some might actually seem insurmountable for those with more than one. And I pray that this account would give us the right kind of vision. May your spirit, Father, the spirit that indwells all of us who know you, minister to us to turn that spiritual light on. We call it illumination. I ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Let me give you point number one from the very start. It sets the tone. The enemy is enormous and intimidating. He is. Let me say that again. The enemy is enormous and intimidating. In verse 4, Goliath is called a champion. The Hebrew word literally means the man between the two. The imposing one-man committee is standing between the two armies, and he is desiring a duel. He is the Philistines' representative. There are conceivably more details given about Goliath's stature than any other biblical character. I think the idea is to show us the behemoth's invincibility, that he is someone from a human point of view cannot be conquered. I want you to think about this. He is approximately 9 feet, 9 inches tall. Well, let me give you a modern comparison. In 1940, when Robert Pershing Wadlow died, he was 8 feet, 11 inches tall. He died, by the way, at age 22. Goliath is 9 feet, 9 inches tall. Can you imagine someone whose head nearly hits an NBA rim? When I grew up, it was always watching Daniel Boone with Fess Parker, and he was like 6'6". And whenever he came into a structure, he had always a duck. Can you imagine almost having a duck under a basketball rim? That's the size of this guy. And it's fascinating. He's not only as tall as a skyscraper, but he is strong. In verse 5, we're told that the coat that he dons weighs 125 pounds. Comparison. A modern-day firefighter's equipment weighs 40 pounds. His is 125 pounds. He arguably has more protective gear than an NHL goalie. Even in verse 7, when it speaks about his spear head, and the word that is actually used there is flame, because apparently it was shaped like a flame, weighed 15 pounds. Now, you might be going, oh, 15 pounds. You think about a stick, okay, if you will, maybe a hockey stick, and then you think about a 15-pound dumbbell. Envision the 15-pound dumbbell being hurled at you from someone almost 10 feet tall. Might that leave a little hole in you? Slightly bigger than a pin prick, I would imagine I could say at this point. That is incredible. See, Goliath is Israel's worst nightmare. Israel and Saul had the same problem. They were walking by sight and not by faith. If I can just illustrate even with the spear for a moment, I'll take you back to the day. I was attending William Wirt. Back then it was junior high. I was a seventh grader, one of three that made the baseball team. And I can remember our first game that I played, and the pitcher standing on the mound, and he looked ever so tall to me. It looked like he was firing missiles down to the catcher's mitt. And when I got up to bat, I was nervous. This was a new experience. And he threw me a curveball. And I'll never forget, because how fast the velocity seemed, and I jumped back, and he smiled at me. So he threw a fastball, and then he threw me a curveball. And this time, I was waiting for it, and I almost took off his head when I hit a single right up the middle. It was a moment in Burge history, so enjoy the moment with me, if you will, okay? But the point was the velocity of that ball by just a middle school or junior high school kid. And then a few years later, I would play tennis on the high school tennis team at Parkdale. And I remember playing a fellow from Bowie. He was 6 feet, 4 inches tall. And when he would serve, it would just seem as if he was standing at the net throwing a ball, hurling it down. It was incredible. You couldn't lob it over him. You ate a lot of overhead smashes because he was so stinking tall. Now, just for a second, envision 9 feet, 9 inches of impenetrable man hurling a spear where the head weighs 15 pounds at you. Can you say together with me, good night, Irene? Okay? This is what David is up against. And I want you to get the visual here. And that's so very important, because visual is the key word that we need to look at for a few moments. Turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 8 with me, please. 1 Samuel chapter 8. And ask yourself this question. Am I walking by sight, or am I walking by faith? In 1 Samuel chapter 8, the nation of Israel comes to the man of God, Samuel, and they say, we want a king over us. Samuel tries to dissuade them. He tries to argue them down that this would not be wise because they have the invisible God watching over them. Why do you want a king? And in 1 Samuel 8, look at 19 and 20 with me, please. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and what? Go out before us. In other words, that we can see him leading us in battle. That's what they wanted. They wanted to be like the other nations. And you have to ask yourself, do you want to be like the average Christian and walk by sight? Or do you want to dare to be different and change the world and walk by faith? Now just flip the page, 1 Samuel chapter 10. Be careful what you ask for, because God might just give it to you. I always think of the psalm that the Israelites made a request. God gave it to them, but sent leanness to their soul. In verse 23, you there? 1 Samuel 10, verse 23. Saul has now been identified as king, and he's hiding. So they ran and brought him from there, and when he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upwards. And Samuel said to the people, give me the next word, see him whom the Lord has chosen, that there is no one like him among all the people. So all the people shouted and said, long live the king. They got exactly what they wanted. They wanted a big guy who was like the other kings. Because remember, like Og of Bashan in Deuteronomy chapter 3? Also an enormous sized man. Apparently the kings were often taller than other people. They were often warriors. This is the case here as well. And a nation says, give me someone like that. And they got exactly what they asked for. And by the way, even spiritual people can get caught up with sight. Turn to chapter 16, just bringing forward a little bit. 1 Samuel chapter 16. Saul has now been rejected from being king. Why? Because he saw the enemy approaching and he offered sacrifices he shouldn't. When it was time for him to be totally obedient and obliterate the Amalekites, he does not do it. And God says, I've rejected him. I have a man now after my own heart who will do all my bidding, is the idea that Paul talks about in the book of Acts. Now, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, let your eyes come down to verse 6. Samuel has now been sent to the house of Jesse for the new king to anoint him. So it was when they came that he looked at Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. I mean, he's the first one. How does he know this is the one? Well, we get a little hint at what he was looking for, verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not, give me the word, look at his appearance or on the height of his stature. Apparently, he was a tall guy. But haven't they been down that path before? Didn't they go down the road of finding the big guy? And what did it ultimately get them when they found the big guy? He wasn't a man of faith. So he says, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You got the difference between the two? There are some visual challenges that you're going to come by in your life, but whenever you have that kind of impediment, remember number one, the enemy is enormous and he is intimidating. And number two, engage the enemy with the eyes of faith. You've got to attack with the eyes of faith. In verses 12 through 22, back in 1 Samuel 17, David is sent on a mission from his dad. He is one of eight brothers, and now he is to go see how the battle is going and to make a food delivery. He's, if you will, the Domino's delivery boy, so to speak. David is now with his brother's army, the Israelites, and look at what happens in 1 Samuel 17 in verse 24. Goliath comes out, and all the men of Israel, when they, give me the word, saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. Now in verse 25, so the men of Israel said, have you, give me the word, seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter. I'm telling you, she must be really a looker. Because if you want to risk it for that, you know what? You might only get one look. Okay, you get the idea. And give his father's house exemption in Israel. But what is your issue? I ask you. They're operating on the basis of sight. They want a king so we can see him. They want to be like the other nations who operate on sight. And this is exactly what they have. But David is different. Can I point something out to you about all this, too, that I find fascinating? David gets encouragement from no one. Have you ever been there? You know, his dad dispatches him, and he shows up, and what does his brother say? Why did you leave those few sheep? They're taunting him. They're making fun of him. And then even as he stands before Saul, and we're going to see in a second when Saul says, what are your credentials? The best Saul can say after David talks is, the Lord be with you. In other words, goodbye, son. Okay, you get the idea. Nobody gives him any encouragement. And maybe there are times you're like that. You have something you know you need to do for God, and no one sees this is of God, and you get no encouragement anywhere. What do? You look to the invisible one, right? Because see, later on in 1 Samuel chapter 30, when David is on the lam and he's running from Saul and he has horrible things happen because he's